Your team knows what's wrong at your company and is willing to help you fix it if you just get them in on the game. Knowing what the score is, and that's really what open book management is. By definition, it's sharing relevant, appropriate information with your team so y'all can make better, faster, more profitable decisions. The idea is that whatever you're doing or whatever problems you're facing, if you got the problems out of the way or you took a different path with something you're doing from an operational or sales or marketing standpoint, those decisions and those projects, the results of that work, should lead to a better score. Well, what's the score?
By now, many of you have probably heard of our contractor growth scorecard. And if you haven't taken the quiz yet, you absolutely should. You see, this thing will take 5 minutes to do, and you're going to learn all about your biggest bottlenecks. But most importantly, you're going to get a ton of free resources to help you in those exact areas. So check it out in the description below, and I'll let you take it from there.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
Ellen Rohr, thank you for coming on the show. Welcome.
Hi, I love being here. Thanks for having me.
It's been awesome to get to know you. You've been on before. You've also hung out with us at the Winter Summit. We just got back from Cabo. You wouldn't stop partying with us. You've probably got more energy than I do, which is awesome.
I'm still down there. I haven't left. I've got all the swag. I'm still looking for you guys. No, we had so much fun.
It was great.
And I learned so much. I loved the program. You guys have a higher standard than most when it comes to your members, your association, and I ate it all up.
Thanks, Ian.
Loved
it. Yeah, it's a lot of work, but I loved having you. I always love showing people what we've created, right? It's like 10 years of doing this, and I'm like, oh, look what we did. Anyways, thanks for coming out. That was awesome. Today, we're going to talk open book management. This is something that you discussed actually at Winter Summit, and I thought it'd be a good thing to bring to the pod. And I would love to start open with, like, why should we do open book management? Because I think that it's a fairly controversial topic, depending who you're talking to. Some people love it. Some people actually will never do it. And let's just start with why you think this is such an important thing for contractors to do in their business.
Well, and I'm so happy because when we were at BTA, I felt like I could have unpacked this for another 2 hours. So I'm super happy that we get to continue the conversation. So by the way, if you were at BTA, that was the inspiration for this. It's like, let's continue because it is a pretty robust subject. But why do it? What I found over my long career is that your team knows what's wrong at your company and is willing to help you fix it if you just get them in on the game. And so knowing what the score is, and that's really what open book management is, by definition, it's sharing relevant, appropriate information with your team so y'all can make better, faster, more profitable decisions. So when you let them in on the game, the idea is that whatever you're doing or whatever problems you're facing, if you got the problems out of the way or you took a different path with something you're doing from an operational or sales or marketing standpoint, those decisions and those projects, the results of that work, should lead to a better score. Well, what's the score? The balance sheet and the profit and loss. Those are the biggies. And then there's additional KPIs, key performance indicators, or other statistics and scorecards that kind of feed into that. But overall, what you do should improve the score when it comes to sales, profit, and cash, the information that's on the balance sheet and the profit and loss. And I kind of stumbled into it, Danny. I didn't like start out with this big idea. Once upon a time when I was a plumber's wife. I'm still a plumber's wife. But when we were first married and I was working with my husband in the business and we were so poor and frustrated and, you know, all the things that happen when you don't know what you're doing, I had a mentor. I found him in a magazine. Now we have podcasts, but I found him in a magazine and he taught me something that changed my life. He said, you've got to charge more than it costs.
No kidding.
Now, we went to college and they got things like the going rate or what the market would bear. Nobody made any kind of connection in my high-priced college education between marketing and pricing and accounting. Like they were like two different worlds. So like when I finally took the medicine and he had me add up all my costs of doing business and divide it by the number of billable hours I might have, then I came up with a break even per billable hour. Right. This is going back to the early 1990s when I was taking the medicine, as it's called. And I did that exercise and I came to this realization that I was going to have to triple, quadruple, quintuple our prices. And we had, it was me and my husband, and we had three service technicians. That was the group. And I just didn't know how to explain to them why I was going to do that unless I showed them the math. So it was like, oh, this is, you know, we've been charged back in the day, we were charging $35 an hour, right. $30 an hour. And so we were going to go up to $150 an hour.
And your team was just like, are you insane? We can't believe this.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So like what? And, you know, they don't know that you're not rolling in the dough. They don't know that you're not making. Aren't you supposed to be making money? You're the boss. You're the cheese. You should be making money. I'm not paying myself. I think that year Hot Rod made $24,000 was his take home. I mean, we were just going into debt every month. And so I knew we had to make this change. So I just showed him the math. And back in the day, I didn't even have a computer. I had a columnar pad, you know, green with lines on it. And I added it up with a 10-key machine and showed him the math. And I just said, this is what I'm coming up with. And I'll tell you the story. I never told this at the seminar, right, so I can tell the story today about what happened the very first day we unleashed these prices. But that's what kind of got me started on this. It wasn't until I read The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack that I learned, oh, I didn't make this up. This is a thing. It's called open book management. And Jack Stack was one of the, you know, early pioneers and adopters of open book management. And he kind of fell into reading history. He kind of fell into it the same way. He didn't know how else to share with his team why they needed to make changes. They were running out of cash. They were going to go bankrupt, et cetera. And so he showed them the money, honey.
And so what happens when you do that? Because I can imagine some people would just be like, I would never show my team the numbers. Like this is not their business. If they find out there's going to be problems, they're going to throw rocks at me. There's going to be mutiny. Like what was the result that you found in this? And also what would you say to all the people that feel this way? Because I know there's a big audience out there that would just, they won't even show us the numbers. I know when we try and do assessment, they're like, I'm not showing you my profit. And I'm like, dude.
Well, for sure that's real. And it has a lot to do with how you grew up and what kind of stories your family or, you know, the adults around you told you about money. In my house, you never talked about money. My dad went out, you know, this is like in the 60s, went out, made money. My mom spent money. And none of us talked about it. It was considered very impolite to talk about money. And every job I worked at, I was told explicitly not to tell people how much I made at the company. But here's the thing. There's a couple stories that come from that. But, you know, the resistance to it really has much more to do with
what's
between your ears and self-worth and just the, you know, the tapes you've heard your whole life. But a couple of things from that. One is my dad, when I was an adult, I found out that he had, I grew up a privileged kid. We had money. I went to private schools. I mean, we went on vacations. I didn't want for anything. It was great. And then I found out when I was an adult that my dad had lost all his money and gone deeply into debt. I thought my mom and dad were taken care of. You know, the siblings get together. I end up moving my parents out to my property where, you know, they live for the rest of their lives. And but it was devastating to my mom, who had no idea what was going on. None of us did. But like she's the one who really got the rug pulled out from under her. And I remember thinking that will not happen to me. Like, I am going to know where my money is. So the worst thing becomes the best thing. When that happened, it was pretty devastating, very devastating for my mom and my family. However, I don't think I'd be the person I am today without that experience. You know, I think I would have given a lot of power away. But as it is, I've, you know, paid attention to my money to very good effect. And it's really been a through line on my career. And then the second thing I want to say about that is I've had a million jobs. I am a trouble making fence testing employee from like age 14 on, had a million jobs, a lot of restaurant jobs, a lot of adventure jobs, windsurfer instructor, ski instructors, ski patrol, like all kinds. If I worked at a boat marina, if I wanted to learn how to do something, I'd get a job. I had usually had two or three jobs. And we all knew what everybody else made. Right. We were told not to tell, but here's what happens when you say to your team, don't tell anybody how much you get paid.
Like, I'm not supposed to tell you, but.
And then you leave that meeting and someone says, well, how much are you getting paid? And so now you put your employee in this position where if they tell, they just betrayed you. Mm-hmm. If they don't tell, you're a jerk.
Right.
Like, you can't win as an employee when your boss tells you that. And then we all told and we all knew. And that's what taught me long ago that it's the secrecy that results in women making only 80% of what men make for the same jobs. Like, why is this such a big secret? Because so often it's not fair.
Right.
You know, why would, yeah. So these are some of the things that started to work on me. Like, so when I shared the information with my team, I'd already dealt with some of those things. Like, why is it such a big secret? With the Skyfall, I will say, after dozens and dozens of years, you know, since that time, just professing and promoting open book management, I don't have stories to tell of the sky falling.
Yeah.
You're going to get some things. And you may have had some of these experiences with your clients or, you know, friends. What if I show them how much money I make? Sometimes it does come up like, Well, you should share some of that with us. Well, maybe you should. However, when there's a bad month, you're the one taking the hit too, not them. The risk is always the owner's, and the owner in my book deserves to make a lot of money just for the risk, just for putting their chips on the table every month. And so, you know, being unapologetically abundant in your expectations of what you deserve is good, but then I think there should be an opportunity for people to move up the ladder at your company as well.
I agree with you. Like, in the environment where everything is tight-lipped, you create conspiracy theories, and then people always assume the worst, right? It's like, oh, it's just like he's in with the cabal. He must be making all this, you know, like whatever it is, right? And in the environment where you don't have any rules, and I would say I'm a bit guilty of this sometimes. Sometimes I overshare with no context, and I freak people out. And I don't really hear about it except for third parties because no one wants to tell me that I freaked them out. And so it's like neither is good. It's not to share or not to share. And we'll get into this in a bit. But it's like to have a good structure around it where you can have a mature conversation. Because I've seen both. I've seen like even on our team, it's just like, man, can you imagine what they must be making doing? And it's like, you have no idea what's going on. And so we don't share enough. And then other times to alleviate that, I'll just share some stuff to just say, hey, I'm transparent. I'm willing and then they're like, I don't know what that means. I have no context for that. And then I have to go into more of a defend and explain. So it's like to have a structure around it, which is what we're going to talk about. I think it makes a lot of sense. And we live in a generation where I think people want to be a part of the process. They want to be a part of the journey with you. They want to build something with you, not just be paid transactionally to do their hourly work. I know my generation's big on this. I know the generations that are coming, hopefully my kids' generation cares about this, but the ones that are in the working force now, they want to be a part of the journey. And then what needs to be more than just a job. I bring this up in a few of my podcasts, but there's one guy who brought up something called discretionary effort. And he said, there's about 40% of people's effort that you can unlock in people when you can align them with the mission and the goals and the overall vision and direction. And they will not give you that unless they feel a part of it with you. And what we'll talk about today, I think, is a part of that puzzle to bring out that discretionary effort in people. Sorry, I saw you do this. Hey, thoughts on this?
I love that. No, that like hit me right there. I feel that's a beautiful way to explain that is to get them in on the game. And so this is why we wanted to explore this so much because it touches on so much. It's just not a matter of just showing the numbers, but again, relevant numbers. Relevance, the key word in open book management, is this information that's going to help that team member make better, faster, more profitable decisions, you know, help them be more successful in their work. You don't have to share everything to everybody. I will tell you though, if there's someone on your team who's super interested, there's nothing I wouldn't show them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd show them everything. Because that person, like, it's not everybody who's going to be that excited about it.
Yeah.
So I would fuel that, you know, I would feed that. Like, okay, what do you want to know? What can we learn? Because the difference between a high-priced contractor and a low-priced contractor is what he or she pays the people.
Yeah.
Because most of the expenses are the same. Like, you'll see this. There's so many patterns that you see over and over again in financial reports. There's fuel, there's vehicles, there's insurance, there's marketing, and they're all pretty much the same. The difference becomes, what kind of trucks are we going to drive? How nice uniforms? What kind of benefits are we going to give the team? What kind of ladder of opportunity, retirement are we going to provide? That's where the differences between contractors come, and that's when the difference in their prices appear.
And it's how they allocate those costs, and it's how much they bring to the bottom line, and it's how much they reallocate to overhead, people, all those things in between.
Yeah. And you know, I've looked at thousands of financials. You have too. I don't see a ton of waste. I see a lot of people trying to make stone soup, like okay. trying to cut like a one percentage, or, you know, just these little bits, trying to cut their way to some kind of prosperity. I wish they were more
expansive,
lavish
thinking.
With themselves, more abundant. You know, there's an expression, why does God put so many seeds in a watermelon? Watermelon. How many seeds are required to propagate the watermelon family?
I don't know, but we're slowly breeding them out of watermelon. But yes, there are many seeds in watermelon.
Well, that's weird. That's weird. But like a seeded watermelon, it's going to have a ton of seeds in it. But really only one is required. One seed is required to create a watermelon plant that would give off another dozen watermelon with all sorts of seeds. And there's these examples all over that even the universe, even God knows, stuff happens. So to have a little bit more breath in your budgeting, in your selling prices, to be okay if something unexpected happens. On my budgets, I have a line at the bottom that says special opportunity, and it's really for anything else I forget, like an extra 10% of something that if I did budget fairly accurately and it's all a guess and I covered all my expenses, then I just have more money that my customers paid for that I could do something cool with. Sock it away, give it to the team, take some for myself, invest in something at the company. Like, this is how you grow, is by being just more generous with yourself. And over again in the transactions between contractors and customers, there's all this concern about a customer being taken advantage of or ripped off. Almost every day I see the contractor getting the short end of the stick in these transactions.
And it's so interesting. It's like, I'm getting my roof done soon. I've got landscaping done. I don't care if somebody's charging me $75, another person charging me $55. I get it. I just want the job done. I just need it done well. I just need to know that it's like, it's to my spec, right? And to my standard. Charge me whatever you have to charge me. The whole reason I'm hiring you is because it's worth my time to have you do it over me, right? And so I think people sometimes employees of the company for sure, and sometimes even the owner, they sell or they price things according to what they would pay for. And I'm like, this isn't about you. This is about them. And you need to get over the fact that I wouldn't pay for that. It's like, well, but you're the one doing the work. So clearly, like, it's worth it for you to do it yourself as well, probably. But this guy, he's too busy, or he's not good enough at it, and he doesn't have the materials and tools. So yeah, and in that vein, you mentioned something earlier, but almost across the board, when we bring members into BTA, there is a pretty standard like nod of like, you need to increase your prices. Like stage one, like if we're actually going to do this properly, we're going to hire these overhead positions, we're going to take on this new structure, we're going to build out your business properly, you're not charging enough to make this work. And they're like, I know, that's why I haven't added all these roles. And I'm like, so charge 5% more. Because guess what 5% is? That's $50 on $1,000. Nobody cares. If anything, if it allows you to have a better project manager or a better process so that the job gets done on time and on budget, you're going to save everybody a hell of a lot of headache and money. So anyways, we're getting off track from open book, but when it comes to charging.
It all leads to that because like even when I started it, it was because I was going to raise my prices. Like once you start crunching the numbers, it's inevitable that you're going to raise your prices. Like when you look at the math, there's just no way you can keep making stone soup. You're going to raise your prices. And that's where I found the motivation to go open book, was to justify why we're doing it. So they are definitely connected. And so much of it comes to self-esteem. Like I was just at a shop recently and there were a lot of seasoned technicians which I love and respect. My husband is one of these, 73-year-old who's been plumbing since he was 13. I mean, this guy, he's got so much knowledge, like in his baby finger, about how mechanical things work. I really admire people who've been in the trades a long, long time. And one of the downsides of a seasoned vet is a lack of self-esteem, perhaps, for what they do in the trades. Well, we're never going to make a lot of money doing this. I'm just a plumber. Like, that makes me absolutely bananas when I hear someone say that. Because, like, what trade is more valuable to the survivability of mankind than plumbing?
Yeah.
You know, from my perspective, again, like you, I don't do these things. I don't know how to do them. So I value them. You know, oh, well, I don't know how much they should pay cost, but I know I want them to show up clean, sober, on time, dressed right, use a checklist, do what they said they were going to do.
And
along those lines, Tommy Mello says this, and I think you'll like it. Friends don't ask friends for discounts. And one reason why is I don't want to be the favor that my friend is doing for me.
Right.
I want full service.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear, well, we gave you a break and now I'm like 3 weeks out. Just like friends don't let friends do discounts is good for them and for you. So that, you know, no, treat me like your best customer and I'll pay full price.
I do this with our members all the time. They come and do work on our home and they're like, Danny, like, should I? I'm like, just please do a good job. Like, I, if nothing else, let's like end this where I'm super stoked that you've done this project. Yeah, I agree. And actually, and on the flip side, I've had, I won't say who, but I've had an electrician come and do a ton of work on my house and they did a phenomenal job. And they didn't tell me till a year later that, hey, P.S., like we were really unprofitable on that project. And I was like, dude, like, just tell me. Like, I would way rather you walked away happy with it too. Cause I was super happy. I gloat about that project all the time. You should see the project. Like, it's really neat what they've done. They like custom did all this conduit over the house and custom painted it black and created this mural out of conduit. And these guys normally do just like industrial electrical work. They're just like, what are we doing? He's like, I can't quote this. Anyways, be open with your people. We're saying, I'm obviously, you know, a unique customer for people, but it's like, I want people to make money. I think your people want you to make money. And I think it's okay to have that conversation. So
you're sure.
Let's get into some of the substance here. When we talk about the actual like setup of this, like what must be in place to be able to roll out an open book management process with your team?
That's good. And, before you roll out the balance sheet and the profit and loss or some numbers from that big scorecard, those are the big scorecards, assets equals liabilities plus equity, what you have equals what you owe, then what you own. That's the balance sheet. Good stuff. And then the profit and loss, most folks are pretty familiar with it. Money in, income minus expenses equals hopefully a profit. Those are the two big reports. It's not that intimidating when you break it down like this. I would clean those up first. They don't have to be perfect, but don't make your first presentation an unaudited set of books. Right. Like, go through them line by line with your bookkeeper, with your CPA, maybe a QuickBooks expert. If you're using ServiceTitan, maybe your CSM, how you should structure it. Make sure that the data is pretty good. I call this process getting to a KFP. Known financial position. That means the books are current, they're accurate, or like 90% there, and that you understand them. Now, you don't have to be all the way there to open the books. But what happens if you show like a hot mess to your team is you're let's stay with contractors for a minute. This works for any business, but specific to contractors, service technicians, installers, they're troubleshooters. So they're going to go to the one number that looks weird and ask you a question and you don't know the answer and they throw out everything.
Credibility goes out.
Credibility goes out the window and you're going to go, but some of this is better than it was. Or I would do that because I'm not that like, I'm not a technician. So I got a little frustrated at first, like, come on, work with me here. It's better than it was. But what I would suggest is I would take a first swing at understanding your balance sheet and profit and loss and starting the cleanup before you open it up to the team. So they just don't discount everything.
Yeah. And I would think, I see this with our members. We build out something called the master business planning file and we do their budget and their sales plan, their production plan. I even tell them, I'm like, look, it's not even one thing to like get the numbers in. Use them for a few months, see how they weave and go up and down and start to understand the story that's being played out in front of you. I call it like reading the lines of the matrix. It's like these green, like, it's like once you can start to see the picture, now it's time to actually bring this down to your team to have goals set off of them and use them. But until then, you might have them, like you say, step one, make them look pretty, make them like look right, but then go and take time to understand. That might take a few months. That might take 6 months. It might take a year.
You know what? It goes fast, even a quarter. A quarter is a game changer. And I've seen your MVP and it's excellent. And what will happen if you start looking at it week after week, and then you close the month and you clean it up, you'll find the out points. You'll find them by looking at them. You can't just clean it up once. You really have to see the flow of information coming from ServiceTitan or your CRM or the bank feed. Like you'll go, oh, that's not even going into the right account. So you'll, you know, using it will help you find the stuff you didn't catch the first time through. So I do think that's good counsel. And the MVP, I think, is too big to share with your whole team.
Yeah. Not everyone knows what that is that's listening, but it's a...
Yeah. It's a very robust spreadsheet that has your budget, your projections then, and then the KPIs and comparisons. And there's some conditional formatting and color coding, like red and green kind of thing.
Yep.
Is that right? Good or bad? Like,
depends on which ones we've coded for who, but yes. Generally, we are looking at goal versus actual on sales, production, and financials that are dashboarded out from a bunch of other complicated reports. So yes.
And it's excellent. And it'll take you a minute to get it down. I would say from a relevant perspective, appropriate for the owners and senior managers.
Right. Yeah.
For your field supervisors, for your service manager, probably too much information, especially at the beginning. So a couple of things. And, you know, once you, let's say you've got the basics down, you're starting to fill out the MVP, you're learning more. By the way, my book is free. It's at ellenrohr, ellenrohr.com. I wrote a book called Where Did the Money Go?
Yep.
Accounting Basics for the Business Owner Who Wants to Get Profitable. Thin book, pictures. I'm very proud of this book. I would have given my right arm for that book when I was going through this process. I was honor bound to write it, and I'm very proud of it. So you can get that book for free and you can share that with your team members. Do a little book club on it. Not everybody will get it from reading the book or looking at it, but it's one more exposure to the info. So then what we want to find are dashboard reports or maybe subsets of the MVP. So for service techs, for instance, a scorecard that has their sales compared to their sales goal, which comes from your budget. Uh-huh. And average ticket and close rate, those are excellent metrics for a service technician, right? They don't need to see everything. Again, if a service technician said to me, well, where did it come from? Or how do you do the budgeting? And what does your P&L look like? I'd say, listen, come sit with me elbow to elbow and I'll go through it with you. It doesn't happen all that often. So if it does, embrace it. That's a good indicator. And then for the install crew, what are the number of hours you bid on that job? And then what are the hours that they have in that job? That is still to this day the only metric I really need for job costing.
Right.
It's super simple. Like you can do a little P&L per job, but that doesn't mean a lot to the installer. Like how is some kind of burden on labor going to make a difference in that person's day? Whereas if he knows I have 16 hours on the job, that's two, me and another guy for the whole day, I better get it done today. That's going to help him or her make better, faster, more profitable decisions. Hey, we only have today. The key to any of this information sharing is you have to tell the truth as best you can. And you tell them when it's a guess. The person who sold that job guessed that it would take 16 hours. Yes. He's hoping. So the more you do this and then compare notes and do a little breakdown on jobs with real data, as opposed to this guy's milking the clock or this guy doesn't work very, those things are just too subjective. But when we're working with numbers and dollars and percentages, now we can play a real game and it gets really, really fun.
And what you're explaining isn't just say, here's the like financials of the company entire employee base. You're saying pick a number that matters most to their part of the organization where they have the biggest impact and allow them to understand the nuances that impact that one number so that they can be a part of the conversation. And as you go further up the employee ladder, you can expose more of these dynamics. Like I think about like when you haven't talked about this project managers, I love to give them a gross profit margin to go after because they are a little more in charge of the labor, the subs and the material and how everything goes after. And what I really liked about Winter Summit when you showed our team was like, you can create mini P&Ls by department. So if you have an install department and if you have a service department and you have it so on, you can give them each their own little like game within your game, own little mini business within your business to go and play with. And so it's like your managers can play that game with like business within a business and the sub employees below them can play it within the number that they have direct control over. Is that?
I should just drop the mic right now. I don't think I've ever said it that well.
I listened to you, Ellen. I listened to you.
It was really good.
I was taking notes.
Yeah, I'm like, yes, exactly that. And so, yeah, there's a path to getting there. I'm a big fan of one pagers or a dashboard report. In ServiceTitan, there's service tech dashboards. There's custom dashboards. You can make one for a CSR, call a customer service rep or a dispatcher or a tech or a salesperson, which is cool because then you kind of limit the information that they're looking at and it's apples to apples for these different positions. Now, when you talked about going a little higher up the ladder, let's unpack this a bit, sure. This idea of departmentalization or classes, because that was like the big aha at BTA, because you guys have done a lot of basic financial literacy information. And so for some, that was like, yeah, we got that. Oh, that's good. Like they saw the departmentalization as like maybe another layer that would be really relevant and easy to play a game with. So if you have a two-department company, small jobs, big jobs, service install, the reason you would create a department at your company would be because the work, the skill required, and the vehicle and tools required are operationally different. So in a service technician, like let's take Zoom Drain. This is a company that I'm a founder of and I'm an owner of. At Zoom Drain, the service technicians need to know how to use the jet, cables, locator, and camera. And their truck has those tools in it. So the truck, the tools, and the service technician's skill set are specific to the tasks that the service technician would do. And then the install department is operationally different. There's a salesperson, we call him a system engineer, and he has his own pickup truck. He goes to the job, a turnover lead from the service tech often, and he goes to the job and he'll price out a sewer replacement or relining or a pipe bursting, a big job. A big job is going to be more than $3,000, two sets of hands, take more than a day. You know, you define what a big job is, but it's using different equipment and different guys in a different skill set. Then the system engineer has the install team follow up. So we've got a service department and an install department. Sometimes people call this install department a sales department.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. It's got sales and install in it for the big jobs. Those are interesting because they're different operationally. If we were to track sales, and then the cost of goods sold, labor, material, and subs per department to that gross profit, gross margin line, we could see how each of these departments is performing. A lot of times it gets blended and we don't know that the install part of our business is sucking the life
right
out of the business. The service side is fueling it or vice versa. So by separating them and then finding a way on the org chart to have someone in charge of each of those departments. See the career ladder here? Now there's someone who says, I'll take install, I'll take service. And now their game becomes the sales and cost of goods sold, labor, material, and subs to that gross profit, gross margin line. Just to define the terms, gross profit is sales minus cost of goods sold, labor, material, and subs.
The gross profit is the things that after you sell the job and go produce it, the people and material it's going to take to go do, that's what's left for the company, not for you in your pocket, but that's what's left for the company.
Then we do overhead and everything else. Yeah. Profit though, gross profit is the dollar amount. Yeah. Gross margin is the percentage. And both are important. And for some reason in the HVAC world, gross profit dollars get neglected and gross margin becomes the only thing we're talking about. Just last night, I was working with a company in Australia. That's why I was at night. And they have a department, they have renovation. And the renovation numbers, the percentages are really good. But there isn't a lot of heft in that department. So there's just not a lot of gross profit dollars that are coming to the party. So while the gross margin looks great, it still needs to either grow or go, this particular department, because it's just not really bringing in a lot of actual dollars compared to the other departments.
Okay.
So both are important. And then you've got game, like you said, games to play with your install manager, with your service manager, with your renovation manager. This is where it gets really exciting. Now, Danny, they will learn it. Sure, read my book, go online, listen to podcasts. But if every week you bring to the party the score, I think weekly is the standard for looking at a dashboard of, you know, that we just described of the income, cost of goods sold to the gross profit, gross margin line. If we look at that every week, they start to make connections between what happened this week and that, and what's showing up on those numbers. So they can say, well, that sales number is wrong because the Fernwicky job, the Smith job, and the Jones job all add up to 140,000 and only says 75,000. So then bookkeeping says, well, this is what I have. I might be missing something. And you go find where the bottleneck of data is. So this gets good because the guys who are producing sales and managing those major expenses, they're the ones who know why those numbers showed up like that. Like in accounting, what do we know? We're just waiting for the invoice to come in or the timesheet to come in.
You know what's interesting in this process is we actually force our owners and sometimes the project managers below them to calculate some of this stuff. So I want you to do your own job costing and that way you will understand what's actually happening. I remember when I was younger, I used to do this. I used to actually do this on paper and I would sit there. It was like 11 at night. I had paint all over my hands. I was tired, but I would be filling out my job cost cards and I'd be like, how much money did I make? Right? Like, just like what happened on this project? And it was as tired as I was, and as much as I was like, I'm running a painting company, why am I sitting 11 o'clock at night filling out forms? It was exciting because I got to finally problem solve and understand what truly happened. I got to see patterns, and it was in those patterns that I could actually take confident direction into what to go do. When all you get is a dashboard review of your data, and it's just like, here's the result, and you weren't a part of the problem solving around how that result came to be, you're not as good at understanding the back end problem solving around it to fix it. And I would challenge a lot of you because I hear this from our members and those who come in all the time, they're like, Danny, do I really have to calculate it manually? And I'm like, yeah, sometimes you do because you don't understand what it took to get to that point. If you just see an end result, you can misdiagnose real quick. So I'll let you speak to that, but it's
another mic drop moment here. That is so incredibly important. I will still start with, a piece of paper, like maybe even just, you know, if you're not keeping score, just get a whiteboard or, you know, glass in your office and write down, you know, daily totals or something, just some kind of, you know, starting point. And then I will often suggest a simple spreadsheet versus a report and service Titan right out of the gate, because we still at Zoom Drain, I thought this would have gone away 5 years ago or more. We will calculate on paper, the guys will keep their own scorecard and then they'll prove out the dashboard. At least at the beginning, when they're junior technicians, they always do it because otherwise they don't get what that number is.
I want to see something else because I've felt this. So we use Zoho and we've built a ton of custom dashboards. Every single time they get built, they're built wrong. The only reason I know that is because I know how to manually work out the right number and then pressure test all the dashboards that have been presented to me. Every single year we do a reset on our goals or anything. These dashboards break and nobody knows except for those who actually understood how to come to that conclusion, how that number should be. So you can pressure test. It's like doing a math equation and having two ways to solve it, three ways to solve it. Mm-hmm. So you can pressure test your solution. And I recommend for those who aren't numbers people, like Excel is amazing. And it's a quick like hack to these bigger costs when you start to set up dashboards. But it's the first proof to know that A, is this worth tracking? B, what does this information tell us? And C, when it actually goes into true automation and it's a part of, say, ServiceTitan's dashboard, I know the inner workings behind it. I can spot when things aren't right. when we have incorrect data?
There's so much that's coming to mind right here. First off, if you don't know how to use Excel, your 15-year-old nephew or son or cousin or something does. Have that kid sit next to you and help you build the formula. I still don't like writing spreadsheets, but I can read them now. Like I can decipher them now. So the spreadsheet is a handy idea. Yes, keep track by hand so that you can prove out these numbers. Let me share a couple thoughts with you along these lines. It is so important for you to know your own score if you're going to be a professional. If you were going to go golfing and you wanted to make the PGA Tour and you went golfing on a Sunday night all by yourself, would you take that stubby little pencil and the scorecard and would you keep score?
Yeah.
100%. Now, here's another sexy thing. I learned this from Harry Friedman. I've never forgotten it. He says, like, if you got a hole in one all by yourself, you would put that one down and you'd circle it. And there would be this like visceral reaction to this moment. There is like this connection between your brain and your emotions and the pencil. And he said, if you got an eight, a snowman, and that's bad, when you write it, it hurts. It sucks to write it. And so there's this connection. So when your service technicians have to, even if it's just on the glass in the office, come in and write what their score is. At Zoom, we use a green dry erase pen if it's above goal and a red if it's not. And they hate
don't
the
pick
red
up the red.
Oh, just the handing of the red pen becomes this like terrible moment. But they have this connection between their behavior. And so as their manager, if the service manager said, tell me about your day, like, you know, get the next one, just some acknowledgement they dropped the pass. Or if it was a great day, tell me about your day. What did you say? What did she say? Would you mind telling the guys about it? That was awesome. So there's these coaching moments where you can, you know, like if you are a golfer and you have a perfect shot, the idea is that you relive it again in your head, that you're trying to like put those feelings with the behaviors so that you can continue to win and excel.
You're creating a pathway in your brain. You're creating a more solid pathway in your brain. Your brain will react to stimulus, and the more concrete stimulus you have around that experience, the more there's muscle memory or whatever you want to call it that will be repeated over time. And when it's just go ahead.
You just have to travel with me now. And whenever I say anything, I want you to tell me what I meant to say.
Ellen, I've got the best and the worst analogies. So like you can bring me with wherever you want to go, and 50% of the time we'll screw it up and the other time it'll sound great. But
you're on point today, mister. I'm absolutely loving this. Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're getting the feeling of it. The idea is gamification. Yeah. We want these guys to play to win. How do you build confidence? You help them win. So, you know, we talked about the manager scorecard. I've got the FQC. Did I send it to you? I give it all to you after BTA. Share it with whoever you like.
Okay. Yeah. We'll put a link in the description for everyone to can download it. But just so everyone knows, this is how you can keep score by different departments and different roles, and helps you understand how to build this beyond just start this conversation. So you guys can grab
that. It's an example. You could use it. Yeah. You could be inspired by it. You could also take your MVP and have that 15-year-old kind of extract a few cells and move that to another page.
Okay.
You know, so you've got the data there. Yeah. You could share some of that data and then ask the guy. Oh, so this is another thing I wanted to say about the holistic score and then, you know, sharing everything and then sharing the relevant number, the one KPI. I learned this from Jack Stack, this classic book, The Great Game of Business. I heartily recommend you listen to it, you read it. Jack Stack is such a cool business owner, super humble. I consider him a good friend. He is the best. But when he was opening the books to his team, I'm gonna truncate his story. You should get him to speak at a BTA.
Okay,
he's great.
We'll slowly bring we have your whole world. We got Keith Mercurio. We got you. We got this whole group.
I'll give him a good guy. And now that I have Cameron Harold, I'm going to just get in a van and follow him around the world. He's amazing.
He's awesome.
So he said that what he did is going back, you know, to the early 80s. The 80s, you know, people don't realize that in the U.S. in the early 80s, the prime was 18%. Like, people were operating their businesses with 22% business loans. I mean, it was ridiculous, and a lot of businesses went out of business, including International Harvester, this big heavy equipment business. One of the arms of International Harvester was Springfield Remanufacturing Company. Jack Stack was the mid-level manager in charge of like 114 employees at this factory where they remanufactured engines. And that is some dirty, mundane work. Just saying. So anyway, he gets tired of the flavor of the month thing and the main company's going out of business. And he says, okay, I'm going to buy this business. He doesn't know anything about financials, really. He has some numbers that the brass keep telling him to hit that don't really mean anything to him. So he goes to get a loan. First off, he gets investors. He gets $100,000 from 13 people. That's $100,000 total from 13 people, like $1,000 from his mom, you know, $20,000 from like the big wig in town. He has $100,000 and he finds out that this branch is in debt $90 million.
Jeez.
So that's his selling price to buy the company. So now he needs to come up with $89,900,000 and he has 13 original investors. This is the game. So he goes from bank to bank to bank to bank, and they all say no. But he says, why are you saying no? And he says, well, look at your ratios or look at your cash flow. So he learns how to read financials because of the rejections from all these banks. But he was, you know, smart enough to say, why are you saying no? What does it need to look like for you to say yes? He finally gets a yes from a banker who gets fired for giving him a loan. The guy gets fired as a result of saying yes. And the very first day that they open under new management with this hefty loan and the same team, just like, who's in charge? What are we doing? He said that there were semis lined up outside the factory ready to shut him down because they were making him pay a day's worth of interest every day.
Wow.
To stay open.
Yeah.
Like, this is how tight this whole thing is going. So he said he didn't know what else to do. Not unlike my story, just bigger and scarier. He said he got an overhead projector and he put the profit and loss in the balance sheet up on the screen. And he had a person on the team sign up for each account. So Susie was in charge of cash at bank one.
Right.
And someone else was in charge of AR. Now, all they were in charge of was reporting on that number and understanding what that number meant.
Yeah.
Not all the decisions that went into like AR, but they had to report on AR and then someone on inventory and then on the credit cards and over on the profit and loss, the cost of goods sold. And somebody had office supplies and shop supplies and insurance. And I mean, you could be a janitor at SRC, Springfield Remanufacturing Company, but you would be assigned a number. And then he had the huddle. So he taught the whole team how to read the balance sheet and profit and loss and open up to ideas. How are we going to increase sales? How are we going to manage expenses? And they turned this company around. Now, to date, they have somewhere around 35 companies of all different stripes in this big conglomerate of Springfield Remanufacturing Company. And they sell companies and buy companies as people, and they're all employee owned to some degree. I mean, employee owned in different ways. So this is like, he's the one who started this. So he has everybody learn every number. This is the way he does it. But then per department, they pick one critical number for the year or for the quarter. So that's going back to your point. There's all ways you can play games, but that's where I learned, like, you can go really granular or you can do the whole thing, or you might do a little bit of a mix.
You said something really quick in there. You said they started to ask, how can we? And it's such an important, like, I think about this all the time. It's like, if people are like, that can't be done, it's because they're not problem solving and thinking through it. And to be fair, if you're not giving them all the understanding of how, like, all the data of what's going on, how can they have a good answer to anything? You're involving them in the how can we? Because without, like, if all they're saying is, hey, you need to work harder and put more hours in, it's like, I can't do any more hours. It's like, hey, well, then here's all the things that play out to efficiencies on job sites. Now you can start to think about the how. And it's opening your employees' brains back up to problem solving and giving them the ability to understand the data and the facts and the feelings that are on site and put those two together to have a more complete picture. But it's the how that matters so much that people are missing. And we need to enable that.
I didn't know anything. I never went on a service call. I can't pick up a channel aux. So I had to ask them, what would you do if you were me? What are we missing? How could we do this better? What is your strength is your weakness, right? So your strength is I came up through the trades. I know everything there is about putting in a water heater. You're less likely to ask someone how we could do it better. Do you see where I'm going? Like taking a beginner's mindset to these adventures by asking your team, how can we do this better? Or how can I help? At the SRC, I went there not long ago. Again, it's like my Mecca. I go back every now and then. And in the factory, they have one key number. They call it the critical number above every station in this assembly line. And it's either red or green. And if it's green, great. If it's red, you could approach that person and with the question, how can I help? Yeah. What do you need?
Yeah.
As opposed to you need to do better, which is no coaching at all. Yeah. Right. Like what's happening? Do you know? Do you have the information you need? Yes, I'm out of this. If you could get me that, we could get back on track is a whole different conversation than just calling someone out for not hitting a number.
Totally. I want to ask a couple more questions, but I just want to take us from where we've gone here. We've started with you need to, as an owner, start to understand your numbers, clean the books up, simplify them down, and start to really know the working knowledge of what's going on in your company. Once you've done that, you can start to take these numbers to your people. Don't give them all to them, but start to give them key numbers that they have direct control over and ability to impact. And then finally from there, you can create a scorecard and a gamification around it so that they can be involved in the how can I and be involved in the problem solving with you and take ownership of that section of the organization so you're not micromanaging all things for all people. In that process, which is what we've talked about today, how does this like impact business? What are some specific examples you've seen? Like how does this change people's behavior, mindset, buy-in, retention of staff? What's the good, bad, and the ugly of doing this type of work? Because that those steps aren't, you know, I'm not going to go do that on a Tuesday. I'm going to have to commit to this process and go give it some right. time. But what's the yield
yeah,
out of
and
that?
The encouragement is, you know, hang out with people who've done it. You know, I don't ever, if someone tells me something can't be done in a polite way, I just figure out I'm not going to talk to that person on this topic again. Like I'm looking for people who are willing to go into the arena and try things and explore. Because you might have some, like you said, sometimes you share too much, sometimes you share too little. Let me share this piece. If you come, I've made a bunch of mistakes in my life, but this is what I try to focus on. If I'm coming to the game, to the arena in a spirit of being of service, of helping people win, of doing the right thing no matter what could go so wrong that we couldn't recover? Like, just check yourself, I think, when it comes to your intention. If you're trying to set somebody up to lose, that's a different intention than trying to set them up to win. So, like, just check yourself as you go into this game, because you'll make some mistakes, but, you know, be transparent, talk real. I don't know how else to say this in better grammar, but I like it when people talk real to me. And I like to talk real to people as opposed to some corporate stuff or buzzwords. I mean, values are important, but unpack those values and how you came to them. And if transparency is one of your values, if success is important for everyone in every position to succeed or find another way to play, then this kind of sets the stage for you to do this. You can do it in ride-alongs and side-by-sides and at the company meeting, like share your intentions behind what you're about to do, and it's going to take better. It'll take better. So what was your question, Anard? I lost.
What is the result of this? What is the result of doing all this?
I got a story of how it can work.
Let me frame this too, though.
I don't have a story of it going really south. I have like moments where someone like the company's not doing well. Sometimes people don't show the bottom line at first, don't show cash flow at first until they start to get some results. Like you don't have to show everything.
Yeah.
But ultimately you'll find yourself showing more and more and more. That's what we found with your team members. Was it Adam or Alex or who's the fellow who gave the presentation that was so good?
Which presentation?
On Open Book Management.
Oh, one of our members.
Noah?
It might have been. Yeah, exactly.
Noah.
Yeah.
Noah. And his right-hand person was either Adam or Alex, I'm forgetting. But it was great. They were great. But here's a story of what just happened, what's happening right now. There's a big company that I've worked with, 155 million, five locations. They do a one-page dashboard report, and they have a tab for each location. And the whole meeting takes 40 minutes to go over the key performance indicators for a $150 million company mm-hmm. with the heads of each of those companies. And what happens now is that EBITDA, because they want they're gearing a company up to be worth selling. So their bottom line is EBITDA, which is an adjusted profit line. That EBITDA is so drilled into them in dollars, right? That we need this much in dollars, and the percentage is great, but we got to bring this much to the party every month. That even if sales are down, they will, I use this analogy, they'll go to McDonald's and get paper towels out of the men's room and bring them back to the shop, but they are not going to spend money that they don't have to spend. Now, for safety, for customer satisfaction, there's a minimum you have to spend and do it, but you've just got to watch. Offense is sales. Defense is managing expenses. Do we send people home or get them good? If they have a truck, they have to deliver a minimum acceptable level of sales. What is needed there? Do they need sales training, technical training, operations? They need to learn how to use ServiceTitan better. Like, they have to pay attention to those levers that are moving those numbers. And they were down for the first part of the year quite a bit from anticipated income, and hit their EBITDA number every month. I mean, that's sexy. So when your team is playing offense and defense like that, and then once they caught their stride, they upgraded the team and training and some systems, the second half of the year, it was just like printing money. But they never didn't make their profit goals. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. I mean, that's pretty high level, but that's what you can expect. But I just always find that if you tell people the truth mm-hmm. and you gamify and create a scorecard and you put in place the opportunity to communicate and get better and help each other, they will play and help you win.
Yeah. It's a combination of just like being real with your organization and having your organization have the trust and respect to be real with you, and then getting to work and having a performance culture that's based in something that we can all align on and we can all rally around. And it's that alignment, I think, that creates so much momentum. It is interesting. I watch it even with us. It's like, man, when we have a goal that we're all aligned on, we all understand how it works, we hit it. When we do this too, though. We make mistakes. When we have a goal that we've set that no one really understands exactly why, or I thought it was clear in the dashboard I created that everyone was like, I don't get what you're doing. I can put out anything I want. It doesn't actually move the needle. And so it's that combination of like, let's get in this together. Let's align on something we all care about. Let's go after something together and make sure everybody understands the mechanics of where the variables are at play. Now we can go play the game together. And I'm not alone in this anymore. It's so hard as an entrepreneur when you're the only one charging all numbers, trying to get everything to move, and you don't even fully know the numbers and you're panicking at night about what's going on. It's like, let go a little bit. You know, it's just like, let go of the pressure. Let your team be a part of it. I find most teams want to. And hey, yep. Give them a little bonus on it. I get it. You can do that. It's like, but they also just want to be a part of it, to enjoy the game.
They'll play just to be a part of it. Now, this conversation does springboard to, well, how are we going to pay them? Mm-hmm. The tenets of open book management of the great game, according to Jack Stack. Oh, I might miss something, but it's to keep, follow the action and keep score. A stake in the outcome. Yep. Like, there's some way that you
mutual benefit.
Yeah, that you're going to benefit. At first, I can't remember, you got to wanna is one of the, like, they, you have to want to play. At Jack Stack's company, if you're not willing to learn how to read the balance sheet and profit and loss, even if you're a janitor on a factory floor, you're not allowed to work there. They're just all committed to this game.
Yeah.
So you can set that culture. You don't have to, but I think it's pretty ballsy to do it that way. But this conversation will lead to, how are we going to reward people? But what I have found is, if they know they win, like the installers, you can put a little bump in a job that you release to them if the installers bring the job in at or below hours. But they'll play even before you put that game in.
Totally.
They want to know, people want to know that they've done a good job. Here's another thing I learned from Harry Friedman, great sales trainer and knew a lot about operations. He said, if you're going to track and not train people or give them a way to get better, it's mean.
Right.
And if you're going to train and not track, it's stupid. What are we training on? What statistic are we moving? So these are two sides of the same coin. Just like sports, just like anything, there should be some objective measurement of your performance. And the path to that is through learning how to do it better.
You just brought up a really good point, actually. This saying I've always had around this, which is like when you start to put in an org structure with numbers by role and hold people accountable to their goals, you transition from being everyone's boss to everybody's coach. And, you know, just being in this for so long, that's kind of like the assumption that I have. But it's actually a really good thing to point out because I don't think people would like realize, hey, my responsibility as an owner, as a leader of these people isn't just to bring the reports and gamify the business. Actually, I have to make time now to make sure I'm their coach because their performance and ability is directly tied to my ability to get them, you know, across the finish line. I remember this being a college pro general manager. I used to coach franchisees. My entire job was to help each franchisee hit their year-end goals. Nothing more, nothing less. Yes, college pro had a mandate. Yes, I need to hit ROI rev targets, all this stuff. I ignored all of it. And I was just like, all I care about is helping you hit your goals. If you suck at sales, I'm going to be out there doing ride-alongs with you. If you suck at production, I'm going to put on a painter suit and we're going to go, you know, roll walls together for a day. Whatever it took to help you achieve your goals. And I know somewhere in the end of all that, I'll achieve mine. But I just need to like commit to that. I can't manage you into success. I need to coach and develop and be a part of you, your journey along the way.
Well, and it's fun. We talked about doing this manually, and I still think there's some place for just writing the score down and having that interaction so you can prove out the numbers. And we live in the best time ever with the advent of AI. Now, I'm at ServiceTitan, and I'm watching ServiceTitan infuse. They call it Atlas. Atlas is the inside of ServiceTitan intelligence that's going to, you know, tag your data and ServiceTitan's collective data and do so much of the housekeeping for us that we will be able to get the score and we'll get those numbers so much faster and see the results of our behaviors so much easier. And that's really, really exciting. I think what's cool for owners and techs and CSRs is that what we're doing now is reducing the game to those behaviors that you really need a human for. Yeah. Like it's not so much, it's like at the end of the day, you don't have to write up 85 things or all those serial numbers. Like that we can use technology to take out the stuff that it kind of is the burden of the game and get right to where you and your customers can have a meaningful relationship. I think that's the paradox of infusing artificial intelligence now into the trades. So I'm excited about that. Like, yes, you do it manually, but not forever.
I was talking, I was just at IRE talking to ServiceTitan about a little bit about Atlas, but yeah, it's interesting. You guys are approaching something that very few do, which is really helping the contractor understand goal versus actual. A lot of people will give you reports on actual, but to actually understand goal versus actual is where the meat really is. That's where you can make impact.
That's the game, baby. Yeah. Yeah. That's the game. And I like to play and I like to help others play and win too. The game is honorable. The game is honorable.
All right.
It can.
Let's play that that game. I'm addicted to it. It gives us all dopamine is why we love it so much. But yes.
Well, what else are you going to do? I mean, we'll play games. I used to, like, I remember being that kid. If the game wasn't clear, I'd play a game. Like, I wonder if they'll notice I show up on time or late.
Yeah, they'll play their own games.
I'll play my own game. Or if I'm wearing the uniform, I don't like the shoes. I'm not going to wear the uniform shoes or something like that. But every time in my 50 jobs, and it happened maybe 5 times that my boss saw me and said, you could play a little game or we could play a much bigger game. Are you interested? I was interested. Yeah. I did want to play a bigger game. And so that's what we have as our opportunity every day. I feel so good about this podcast, mostly because I feel like you're like Obama and the anger translator, but the opposite way. Like I'm saying stuff and you're making it clearer. Felt like my experience today. So sweet. Thank you, Danny.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Ellen. Thanks for being on here. I love having you. So it's good. Well,
we love each other.
Yeah.
Well, and I love your team, Lauren and Juan.
They're behind. They can hear you. It's good. we should wrap it. We've gotten through so much. And I think from everything you've taught us today, I think all of us probably have, for those who are driving, probably have a lot to go do. And for those who have taken some of this to heart, I encourage you, like, take some time to think through some of these steps. All of you are at different places in business, but if there's anything we even teach at Breakthrough Academy, this is at the heart of it. It's like understanding how to gamify this organization so you and your team can play better together and taking the load off of you as an entrepreneur. So Ellen, well thought through. Thank you for your thoughts today.
And you're the best. And that's what was so obvious when I was in the mix with you guys at BTA is how much you care and how much real financial information you're delivering and coaching. It's really having a positive effect on so many people. So thanks. And I'll come back and we'll talk about ways to pay.
Okay.
We'll build on this.
Yes. Perfect.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you guys have a good night. We've got the downloads below for you. Ellen, is there anything else, any other way for people to reach out to you if they want to have a direct conversation or?
eroh at servicetitan.com. Drop me an email and let me know how I can help you.
Sweet. Okay. She's good. Thanks, Ellen. Have a good night. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.